I'm here to share the story, and I've had some powerful things where I'm able to be like, this is real to me. This is real. This can be real to you. And the steps that I took to bring about justice, to bring about peace to my family, it's not, I'm no different than anybody else. It's been cool because as Bridget and I have shared the story, we've had people actually come up to us and be like, all right, I can face mine too. Because you did it, I think I can too. And that's what I want, is for other people to be like, because she did it, I can too.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by the Going North Advancement Compass, available now on Amazon.com. It is an interactive journal for you to track your personal growth, track your goals, track your wins, and help you advance north to your next level of success. So pick it up today and get growing. Now let's get on with today's episode. And today on the Highlight Reel Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, my friends. That's right, indeed, courtesy of one of the best websites on planet Earth. Going strong today, like six-pack abs and counting. That's right, indeed. Heck, might even be nine-pack abs because of steroids for your dang podcast. The one and only site known as Podmatch.com. The wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts that are cool to freaking in. And today's guest is cooler than two cucumbers indeed. Because let me tell you a bit about y'all. Because she is the freaking amazing wife, speaker, advocate, dog lover, as well as a health, fitness, and chocolate enthusiast. So let's give it up for Miss AJ to the N herself. The wonderful, wonderful, amazing, joyful, and natural herself. The one and only Alicia Johnson Niles. How are you doing today, Alicia?
I'm doing great. So great to be here. This is a nice way to end the day.
That's right. I got you at the golden now.
Just got off work, so this is perfect.
Yeah, that's right indeed. That's right indeed. It means it's gonna be nice, raw, and real. The world ain't ready.
Uh-oh.
Oh, don't worry. You'll be fine.
Not worried. I needed a good laugh. I think I did tell you today's my daddy's birthday, right?
Exactly. Rough times. Yeah.
So, not rough times. It's good to remember him. So.
That's right, indeed. Good to remember, indeed. That's right, David. Hey, name of the game is, there's a whole bunch of stuff I probably forgot with the introduction, since it's not allowed to be 555 days longer, probably covered, I don't know, metaphorically 24. So am I filling in any cavities I may have missed about you?
I think you're good.
You got it all? I ain't missed nothing?
Well, there's plenty. We can, but the basic bio was very well delivered. I appreciate it. So, writing a book called Angel in Arlington, been working on it for a while. So, we are pushing for traditional publishing because what we have is something very, very unique and powerful. And I kind of laugh and go, is this really my life? Yes, it's a 100% completely true story.
Any reason why you're so staunch on traditional publishing?
My co-author, who you interviewed a while ago, and Bridget Cook-Birch, and I, we decided that this is the route we want to take. And I mean, it is not like traditional publishing or not, period. But we feel like the power in the story, it's strong enough that she's gone traditional several times. And we feel like, now I don't want to be like, I deserve this, because I don't. But the story, my dad, the message is a powerful enough one that we want it to get out to a much larger audience. It's a powerful book about healing. It goes over a very, very dark topic, but also it's, as you know, with Bridget, She loves transformational books where she brings dark lightness out of the dark, and it very much does that. It's a message that we both feel very strongly it needs to get out to a much broader audience. So we're shooting for traditional.
Good deal, indeed. You'll have to see it. So how's your Bridget meet anyway?
Actually, as I was writing my book, there's a lot of spiritual in the whole process. But as I was writing my book, I felt compelled to write my book. And then I had some cool things come up that compelled me even further. So I finally started to do it. And I got to a point where I got stuck. And so I hired a writing coach who was just like, your story is too complicated. Your dad's killer is on the loose. We need someone who knows how to deal with heavy things. And so she connected me with Bridget, who was still writing The Witness Wore Red at the time. And then I crossed paths with her at a writer's retreat, or not a writer's retreat. It was a aspiring author summit. We met, we talked, and within a month, she's like, okay, fine. We're working together on your book. So that's how I met her. So she is the keynote speaker. And I went up to her crying, being like, I'm stuck. And she's like, I've heard about you. I remember hearing about your story. Let's talk. And she is just, you know her. She is just the most amazing, powerful, powerhouse, thickest heart in the world. One of the biggest blessings, I swear, my dad probably had to have something to do with connecting me with her, because she's been the biggest blessing.
Good times indeed. That's right indeed. And I heard she met your killer too, but there's probably a whole bunch of stuff I missed in between her knowing him, you meeting her, and then everything in between.
Well, I know that a lot of the things you share on your podcast is like to help people who are writing their books, right? And the entertaining things that happen along the way. Is that a good way of putting it? As they're writing, yeah, it's... We hired a private investigator who found my dad's killer, and so she met him. Yeah, it was wild. It was a wild experience because the nature of the crime and how much we didn't know about my dad's killer, which was we didn't know anything about him because the Navy's not like open. They don't disclose a whole lot. Surprise, surprise. We had to be very, very, very cautious. And so, but it was executed. That, oh my gosh, that's the worst word to use. but it was done very well. Like, it was done very strategically. Bridget is an absolute professional. And we made sure that we had things lined up. And so she was safe. And it ended up being an absolute game changer, obviously, because we got the side of a story that there's no other way we could have, except straight from the horse's mouth.
Okay, all right. Because I was like, how the heck that even happens? Like, is Bridget a secret spy that we don't know about or something? She out here wearing all black and leather, just infiltrating random places.
She might have. No, she goes about things very... Noah's not an answer. Well taken. So, same thing with me. The answer is no if you don't ask. So.
Oh, okay. And is the killer still alive?
No, he is not.
Oh, he died. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Cool. That's right. Indeed. Yeah. That's right. Indeed. I'm glad she made it out alive indeed, because it's like, shoot. That takes some courage to really go through that.
I wasn't her husband's favorite person at the time. Because she was determined to go. So it was, but she's met killers before, so you know, that was just this old hat.
All right, well good deal. That answered one of the questions I had in my mind going into conversation. I'm like, wait a second, it's like she's all sweet and pretty and whatnot, but it's like behind closed doors, like she knows things. It's like, don't double cross her.
She does her research. She very much does her research. Well, and here's another thing is, I do know that when she speaks, she talks about when she met one of her co-authors' killers, so I can share that. That's something that, yeah, I can share that. It's not a major spoiler. It's one of our hooks.
Good times indeed. Hey, Bridget's freaking awesome, but hey, it's about you today. So my goodness, going through this whole process. What was it like beforehand? Because if I'm not mistaken, sadly, your dad was killed when you were only two.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He was murdered by one of his fellowship mates. And I spent my life, I was diagnosed with complex PTSD when I was 35. But between the time he was killed and the time I was diagnosed, I dealt with a lot of emotional and mental issues. That makes sense. Now that sounds crazy, but I was afraid of everything. And just kind of like worst case scenario would always happen. It was almost like it's worst case scenario is going to happen. You know, it's what is it? Innocent till proven guilty. It's like worst case until proven okay kind of thing. And so I was always just constantly in state of fight or flight, always like waiting for something bad to happen and things like that. And I knew I was different. I knew I acted different than a lot of my peers, you know, even as a young child. I remember when my mom would leave the house and I'd kind of hold my breath and I wouldn't be able to relax until she got home. You know, death is something that I absolutely hate. Nobody likes it. Who, you know, who are we kidding? But I was more hyper aware of mortality than most children, teens, adults. One example, this was like maybe 7 or 8 years ago. I was on my way up to work with a coworker. She was carpooling, and I felt really uncomfortable with somebody in the workplace. And I just admitted to her, I'm like, you know what? I just kind of, when I go into the office, I get a little bit anxious about an active shooter, which sadly, those are more common than they used to be. But she's like, oh, honey, that's a one in a million thing. You know, you need to not worry about that. And I'm like, that one in a million happened to my family. And that was just kind of an eye-opening moment for me, where it's just kind of like, I don't know, once it happens, you're more on the lookout for it. I mean, it's not like I remember the knock at the door. My dad was in the Navy. People in the Navy have guns. It's, you know, and when they're in the military, they're more likely, there's a higher chance of something happening, but still. Homicide is still a very different feeling. You know, it was somebody that my dad trusted. It was somebody that my dad knew. So, anyway, like I said, I grew up very anxious, being afraid of a lot of things, and I was embarrassed of that fear. So it just kind of compounded. So I saw myself as a second-class person because it's like I didn't act normal. I wasn't fun. I wasn't happy. I was happy. I mean, I need to get, put that disclaimer out there. My mom was absolutely, she is the most wonderful person. She answered my questions. I mean, I thought that I was her partner in crime until she got remarried, and that opened its own little can of worms. I was not a happy little 6-year-old when she got remarried. But I'd ask her questions and she was open. What happened to daddy? Oh, your daddy was killed by a bad guy. And we're also Christian. And so I was blessed to have that hope and, you know, I dare say knowledge that we're going to see my dad again. And that also shaped my life in some very positive ways, where along the way, along with the whole being afraid, being embarrassed of my fear, another thing that I was incredibly embarrassed about until a pivotal point, which we can discuss in a little bit, was I didn't remember my dad, not a single memory. How could I care? Like, I didn't have the right to miss him. I didn't have the right. I didn't remember the knock at the door. I didn't remember anything about it. I didn't know my life before my dad was killed because he was killed right after I turned 2. And fast forward to when things changed, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. This makes total sense. And as I've been writing the book and connecting with other families and connecting with other victims or survivors, I don't know what term you want to use. It depends on the setting. But I've learned that little teeny kids, especially, they carry that and they are embarrassed for the fears and the longing to be able to connect and not being able to. So, up until I started writing the book and doing some research, it was a lot of just running from my own feelings and being heavily in grief and not knowing how to handle it. And nobody knew it was there, including myself. So, it's just happy times, good things, a child grieving who doesn't have an outlet, which is a recipe for a lot of pain. And my brother, same thing. Different. He handled it differently than I did, but he was 8 months old when our dad was killed and everything. But same kind of thing. Like he was diagnosed with complex PTSD when he was 40.
Wow. So I guess sure. I guess that. Yeah, so that would be 2 years after you got your diagnosis then, right? Phillips since he was born two years after?
No, he was 40. That was 7.
Oh, okay.
I was starting to write my book at the time when he was diagnosed. I think he was 40. I'm pretty sure he was 40. So I was diagnosed at 35 or 36. So you know, ballpark around there. And both of us grew up as people pleasers, big time people pleasers. We attracted abusive relationships, things like that. I mean, we're nice people. We're empathetic. A lot of people who have gone through trauma are empathetic, right? He's a good guy. He's an amazing guy, amazing dad. So he's doing very well. He's done a lot of work, and he's also been able to connect with our dad, which is really cool.
So yeah, because I was curious. I was like, oh, so he just got his diagnosis a few years after you did. I was just wondering what the impetus was for it. It's like, oh, sis got checked out, and it's like, ah, maybe I should get checked out too.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, is he was family man. He had kids. I didn't get married until I was 46. I was way behind all of my brothers, but, you know, 4 kids, and he was focusing on that. And okay, Alicia, all right, digging into this stuff, all right, whatever. But he also had his concerns. I had some family that were just like, what are you doing? Why are you throwing rocks at the hornet's nest kind of thing? And I'm just like, I have to. So, which I'm sure a lot of your authors run into that. It's like, is there digging into things that are painful for the family? There are things I just want to kind of keep. And they're like, you know what? That happened. Let's just kind of let it be in the past as you're sitting here festering in your own pain. A little dramatic there, but you know. That's one thing that I do as far as authors and things like that. And one thing that Bridget is just so masterful about is helping them find the right way to express their voice and realize this is your story. It's not theirs. I mean, yes, it impacts them and things like that, but there are ways that you can gracefully go about it without. You have the right to be able to tell your own story. And if you are concerned about others, I believe that you can do it in a way that can be graceful to others. Does that make sense?
That makes sense indeed. That's right indeed, with all the quarters and nickels.
Because, like, if I were listening to this, would I understand it? Or is it be like, she's a little bit too deep here? So.
Oh, don't worry. Deep is when you talk about the random asteroid coming from freaking Venus and aliens coming out of it to harvest our young and make giant crop circles to some of the giant marshmallow. Now, if you talked about that, that would be really deep.
I don't do that. No, but I don't do that. It's just like...
Now, he said that, I'd be like, yeah. Like, all right.
Well, your listeners, I don't know if they know that you've just got this, like, bright colors behind you that looks like a galaxy exploding behind your head. Well, there's...
Yeah, plot twist to part of the asteroid. We're making this crop little... circles happen.
I've got my grain walls and a picture of Daddy in the background smiling, so, you know. Your it's set like, is yeah. Definitely more exciting, so.
It's called you honoring your daddy. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
He deserves it. He was amazing. I got to learn so much more about him. And I feel him around, so. Not all the time, but when needed.
I hear you indeed. So my goodness, I'm not sure if this is G14 classified until someone decides to publish the book, but what led to your dad being killed by somebody? I guess he was a friend or someone he trusted? Is that what happened about her?
That
remember here correctly?
Is definitely one of the... What is going on that people going through? They will be going through my life trying to research and find out what really happened, what caused them to pull the trigger. We didn't know for so many years, including while we were writing the book. It was several years to us getting into writing the book. It was like, yeah. So we know now, but the readers will find out when they read the book. I mean, I know that's mean, but yeah. There was it was either Was it drugs? Was it mental illness? What was going on? Where's the cover up? We knew there was a cover up because the Navy was just super, 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 super quiet. Like, we're talking years and years of my life digging and trying to find out and trying to get answers from a stone wall, which I appreciate. You know, it's, I've got a mad respect for our military, and I know that there are reasons things need to be kept quiet. I absolutely know that. I mean, when my dad was killed, it was in Pearl Harbor. It was right after Vietnam. People did not like the military. So you get a young family man, gentleman. I mean, he grew up in D.C. He took dancing lessons. He was like, you know, I mean, not your stereotypical. He wasn't salty. He was just like Mr. Gentleman. And anybody that looks at my website, you know, he's a good looking guy. I'm allowed to say that about my dad, but he was an absolute gentleman. And if word were to get out that that happened, civilians would not have been happy. So I get that, you know, even now I know that sometimes, you know, I have friends who are survivors of military loss, and they pull me aside and they're like, well, yes, that happened to me, but I can't say anything because it's classified. So I understand that there's reasons to protect, you know, what's the greater good. But 40 years after my dad had been killed, what was the greater good? There was not the greater good. That deserved to be cracked open and found out. And there, yeah, it was just after several years of, I don't want to say that's all I did, because, you know, I have a job and a life and a family, and I don't have my own family. I got married 5 years ago, almost 5 years ago, but there are other things. But at the same time, that was a very, very, it was something that I couldn't let go of until I had my answers. Not completely. And so it drew me back in. And then a lot of miracles happened along the way.
Ooh, what kind of miracles?
A lot of miracles. I felt my dad guiding me. You know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are going to be like, sure you did. But this is one thing that I've shared on other podcasts. You're like, delete. No, just kidding. But so when I was 5 years old, I had a dream. So, well, let me just, before I share the story, I really believe that my dad can talk to me and that he has reached out to me from the other side. And I feel like one of the reasons I've written this book is because I want other people to be able to have that connection, whether they believe that they carry their loved ones in their heart and that's how they still live, or whether they believe that they are there, you know, in heaven, cheering them on. I want to validate people, even if they don't remember, especially if they don't remember their loved one. I want to validate their need and their privilege to have that connection. And so, you know, growing up Christian, and again, still Christian, my mom was awesome about talking about my dad, and your dad's watching over you. And quick little, when she got remarried, she did what most people did, especially back in the day, took daddy's picture down, because we got to honor the stepdad. My stepdad is wonderful. My brothers are wonderful. I was very blessed, but man, let me talk to those mamas of grieving kids. There's a few things that my poor mom, like, I don't blame her at all, but she's, you know, a few things that could have been done differently, which is why I'm here. But anyway, tangent. When my mom got remarried, dad's picture went down. I'm like, oh, I can't talk about him anymore. What does that do to a young child? Half of who I am doesn't matter. It's not like they're thinking that, but subconsciously, half of who I am doesn't matter. That makes self-esteem even worse. What do? When you're me, you go to the kitchen and you become a couch potato, and you eat and you eat and you eat until the kids start telling you you're fat, and it becomes this big old ugly snowball until you have eating disorders and all sorts of things. And yes, that was my life. And I stopped talking about my dad because I didn't feel like I had the right to. I didn't feel like I had the right to do that. Because again, honor my mom and my stepdad was wonderful. Well, fast forward 5 or 6 years, and I sat down with my mom, and I told her about I was going through a really rough time, and I told her about a dream that I had when I was 5 years old, and it was my mom and my dad and my, like, daddy, this guy, and my brother and I walking home from church, and I was wearing this purple and green dress that she had made for me when I was 4 years old. You know, the few years where she was a widow and just taking care of my brother and I. And she made tons of my clothes because she's very talented too. Like she's just amazing. But she gave them all away. And I remember getting mad at her, being like, those are mine. And she's like, you have all brothers. We don't need these. So in the dream, my mom and my dad were singing this hymn, and that was it. So I'm sitting here, 11 years old, telling my mom about that. She looked at me all wide-eyed and she's like, well, you know the significance of that hymn, don't you? I'm like, no. She's like, well, it was your dad's favorite in the world and it was sung at his funeral. So then she proceeds to get his little treasure box down, dog tags, things like that, pulls out my christening dress, the last birthday present he gave me, and the purple and green dress. She's like, I didn't know why I kept this. So then over the years, I'd hear that song come up at very poignant times. When I went to his grave for the first time in several years, because, you know, my mom was a homemaker, my stepdad, he was a mailman. We didn't have a whole lot of money, so I was able to go back to DC when I was 17, saw my dad's grave, felt that connection. They happened to play his hymn at church on Father's Day. You know, just it would come up at different points in time where I'd even start to feel like, is he really here? Basically, like I believe that God was able to, despite all the craziness, and I'm like, whoa, it's me, let me tell you about my eating disorders. But he was able to keep me going. And I was able to learn, like, these experiences I had got me ready. So when I was 30 years old, I was on a date, you know, chronically single, with this guy that I was really interested in. And his mom had died 2 months before. And she, you know, I was kind of talking to him about it because I'd like kind of here I'd had all these experiences with my dad, but I kind of tried to keep it downplayed because when I'd share them with people, they'd be like, oh, you're weird. But
That's a shame.
anyway, yeah, it is. But people, if they don't understand, it's uncomfortable sometimes. It's not like I'd go in and go off on some weird old tangent, but you know, oh yeah, my dad died and I feel connected to him. They're like, get over it already. Because that's society. It's, you know, it's been 6 months. Oh, why are you still sad about it? Because I still love them and they're still gone. But I remember talking to him and I'm like, well, yeah, my dad died when I was little, but you know, of course I don't feel those things. And he's like, you have every right to miss him. You don't have the memories I do. That opened one door. And then the next thing he said was, this is none of my business, but you need to find out what really happened to your dad. And I'm like, you're right. Permission granted. Blast that door open. Mom, what do you know? So did a bunch of research and met some amazing people. And it's kind of cool because by that point, I recognized my dad's voice. And I knew, and it, man. When I allowed that, when I decided to start doing that, he was a pretty constant companion. And I'd have thoughts, do this, call this person, do this, do this, do this. And when I talk about miracles, there's a free chapter on my website called Way Course. He hasn't handled it well. Go to angelinarlington.com and sign up for that free chapter. And you will see just how my dad talked to me and the miracles that happened, things that nobody could know. Except him or the Holy Spirit or whoever. And as far as, you know, it is tragic, it is heartbreaking that he died. It is tragic, it is heartbreaking when anybody passes away. And if I could have him back in my life, of course I would. But I'm so grateful for the things that I've learned. And I'm here to share this story. And I've had some powerful things where I'm able to be like, this is real. To me, this is real. This can be real to you. And the steps that I took to bring about justice, to bring about peace to my family, it's not, I'm no different than anybody else. It's been cool because as Bridget and I have shared the story, we've had people actually come up to us and be like, all right, I can face mine too. Because you did it, I think I can too. And that's what I want. Is for other people to be like, because she did it, I can do it too. And there's so many, you know, I've got a love-hate relationship with the military, with the government, with everybody, but I was able to come across some of the most amazing people in places that nobody would believe. So slightly passionate about this.
Nothing wrong with that, indeed. Ain't nothing wrong with that, indeed. Right, indeed. It's great how you get to meet people every now and then on your journey. It's like, all right, cool. Permission granted. It's like, all right, cool. Like, hey, I was freaking too at the time, and folks on the surface will be like, you were too. Like, you don't have to worry about nothing because you ain't got no memories. But it's like, ha
Right.
ha, you actually freaking did. They just showed up in the brain later in life when it was fully developing. Some memories popped up.
Well, they weren't even memories. It was just the feelings that did not go away the entire time. It was grief the entire time. That's one thing I believe about grief is it's just kind of like everybody grieves differently. But suppressing doesn't do anybody any good. Well, maybe we've got to find, maybe it's timing. It's all about the right timing, but it doesn't go away.
Well, yeah, definitely indeed. Sorry indeed. But if I'm not mistaken, you're able to put the emotional eating at bay and end up doing some modeling too, right?
I did some modeling, yes. I did. And it was, well, and actually, this is not in the book. When I was 13 years old, my family decided to move to a smaller town. And my mom was just like, you need a fresh start. And she's got a bunch of sisters. And her sister's like, Alicia needs a fresh start. So I went to some people, I don't want to call it that. But I went and lived with my aunts. And they put me on a plan. And took me exercising, and then I had my growth spurts. So I was able to learn a healthier lifestyle and to appreciate a healthier lifestyle. And so, yeah, I was able to slim down, and I was shocked when I was scouted to model at 25 years old at the makeup counter that I was working at. And so I did a little bit of that. It was surreal. It was cool. We did a photo shoot, actually, in Hawaii, and this was right after 9/11, and I was able to... With my tenacity, I was actually able to talk the powers that be at the base on Pearl Harbor to let me tour it. And this was 2 months post 9/11. And that was a powerful experience. And then just kind of see where we lived and grew up. And that was healing. And then I did a photo shoot on the identical twin sister ship at the one my dad was killed on. It's called the Turner Joy. Yes, advertisement here. Go see the Turner Joy in Bremerton, Washington. It's really cool. They do tours. I was able to do that and do a photo shoot there as well. So just very healing. Didn't get paid for them. I paid for them, but it was worth it. So I got paid for other things.
Ah, was it a 3-hour tour?
Gilligan's Island. I am old enough to know exactly what you're talking about. Was I Marianne? No, I'd probably be the combination of Marianne and Ginger. I was a Pris, but at the same time, I didn't have the class that the Ginger did. So.
That's right, indeed. Ginger looks, Marianne personality. I love to see it.
Well, thank you. I'd love to be it.
That's why she got snagged, y'all. You'll love to see it.
My nieces did. My brother's kids, they're beautiful. Anyway.
Yeah, you'll love to see it, indeed. So, my goodness, so during that time of modeling, did it help you with your confidence to be able to put pen to paper with what you're doing now?
There are ups and downs. It's modeling is not something that, I mean, I was grateful that I did it, but it had its own little demons along with it. But it did boost my confidence. I worked for the agency for a while. I'm still friends with the owner of the agency. She's wonderful. And there were some challenges along the way. But yeah, I think it definitely gave me some of that confidence as well. So when I dug in and started to do the research and went to the Turner Joy and everything like that, at that point, my modeling was done. And I was grateful because I had more important things to pursue. So finding out what happened.
Yeah, there you go indeed. So what else did you learn about yourself through this whole process of putting all this content together?
You never know what's going to happen. You need to be prepared for surprises. And like I can't say, I want to be like, rah, rah, miracles, but expect miracles and also expect some major, major roadblocks. And, you know, one thing that even I got in contact with some of my dad's friends who are still some very, very dear friends to me to this day. And I remember when I was halfway through the process, they're like, when are you going to stop? And, you know, you just got to keep listening to your gut. I mean, within reason, but like, you know when it's time to stop. And I didn't until I was able to get my answers. And I'm very grateful. I mean, it was getting to the point where this may never happen. And then we had some miracles. To answer your question, I'm trying to answer your question. What did I learn about myself? I learned my tagline is unlikely courage, because as you guys, as y'all have learned about me, I was the least likely to track down a killer and face the U.S. Navy because I was afraid of my own shadow. But there was this courage and tenacity that once I tapped into it, it just kept going and it propelled me forward to do what I needed to do with God's help, with the help of my dad, with the help of others. I discovered this unlikely courage, which even now, I mean, I met my husband and lived cross country during the middle of a pandemic. And, you know, it's tenacity and courage and confidence and trusting a loving God and your angels. I learned that in droves during the experience. So, and as far as writing, there will be times when you want to stop because you are afraid of what your family thinks. There are times when you're going to want to stop because you don't know if it's worth it. You don't know if you're worth it. And I can tell you right now, stick to it. Go with your gut because it will haunt you until you do. So, but don't do stupid things. Do it within like legal parameters and, you know, make sure that you've got support and everything like that. But you don't know if you have support unless you ask for it. And if you don't get it, ask somebody else.
All right, good deal indeed. Any death threats from any unforeseen shadows? I don't want to name names, but I would think somebody will pop up in the process of all this digging, being like,
knock
hey.
On wood.
It's like, you know too much.
The good news is with my story is it's not going to destroy any careers. They're all retired. It's not going to hurt anybody. And that's one thing. I mean, you know, to go back to when I was talking about the military and they have their reasons and things like that. Sometimes I firmly believe that families deserve to know the truth. I really do. But I also feel like maybe certain details, if it's security, if it's going to cause more death and more harm, then you need to go with the greater good. But with me, my dad turns, it's his 77th birthday today. And he was killed when he was 28. There's not a whole lot of people out there that my book could cause major problems from, too. And so to answer your question, no death threats anymore.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, yeah. I'm like, shoot. In this era of exposés, you're like, oh, let's jump in on this.
No, there are some good people in the government. They're good people who are there because they want to serve. And I was able to meet some of the greatest people, and I'm so grateful to them. And then there are the idiots. So not such great people that want just to, they want you to go away. And then I didn't. So.
My gosh, indeed. Gotcha, indeed. So, my goodness, so is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often when you're doing interviews like this?
Do you have any advice? And mostly, we talk about grief and trauma rather than getting into the experience of writing my book. What are some other questions? One's a book coming out. I don't know. We already talked about that. Hopefully, sooner than later. I don't know. Do you have any questions?
I guess I'm just curious what's in the brain.
What you're curious is what's in the book, which I appreciate. I'm flattering myself here. So I'm like, you can't wait. Out of all of your authors, you just can't wait.
So I'm talking about these. I'm talking about indeed. So with all that grief, what do you do for self-care these days? Are you still doing the running?
A little bit, yeah. Well, I try to. I do the running. What else do I do? It's gotten different since I live on the opposite side of the country of my family. I work a lot. That's not self-care. That's paying for me to do things. But yeah, I do still love the running a lot. When I go back home to see my family, that's a huge one. I've got three little dogs, as you know. My husband is very kind. He's wonderful. So I've got some great people around. My neighbors just got baby goats, so we'll go visit them. Get the occasional pedicure, go eat at really good places. But yeah, running is a big one. I make sure that I work out every day, and it's very therapeutic for me. So, and I stay in contact with my friends through TAPS, Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, got to give them a shout out. This is a military organization for families of the fallen. And they call it the TAPS family for a reason, because you connect with, as you know, you connect with your people on such a level that they get you. So yeah, just getting involved with people who understand me, my family, running, and being very grateful for where I'm at and coming on podcasts.
A good deal indeed. That's right indeed. So you're the right folks. You got to find some neighbors who have too many Tom Brady's, too many goats. That's right indeed. Let me stop.
Yes, many goats are just, they're like, oh no, they're going to be so loud. I'm like, it's adorable. My dogs might bark, but they're fine. Anyway. But they have many goats, so we don't have to.
Ah, there you go. That's right indeed. Just keep footballs near them and they'll be fine. Let me stop.
Oh, boy. Poor little babies. They're glad you don't live there. Oh.
Hey, it goes back to my crop circle joke from earlier. All these corny jokes are building up to a giant circle of all these corn cobs to summon the great random spaceship and asteroid.
Oh, my gosh. You are fantastic.
I'm just messing with you.
I appreciate the laugh more than you know.
You love to see it indeed. You love to see it indeed. Well, coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive, and that is, if it'll wake up tomorrow and you're 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
Oh, that's powerful. What advice would I give myself? Life is amazing. It was about that. I was 25 when I started modeling. So I would just be like, keep enjoying. There's a lot of things you don't know, and trust yourself, trust God, keep listening to your dad. Things are going to be great. The best things are coming up.
Good deal indeed. Good deal indeed. That's right indeed. That's right. The best days ain't even happened yet. They're better days that await. That's right indeed. Hashtag better and not butter.
Yep. Some of the Southers butter. Just kidding.
Unless you want to put some butter to the better days, you just slide over to them in the frying pan of life.
Oh my goodness. They fry everything here.
There you go.
Have you seen that meme about what would happen if pot became legal in the South?
It would be freaking weed balls, I guess.
No, they show it. Still have to look it up. It's hilarious. They show it like this, the leaf battered and fried. It's like 5 minutes later in the South, they show it battered and fried. Anyway, I deeply appreciate that meme.
That's right, fried and butter. Yeah, you'll love to see it indeed. You'll love to see it indeed.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Well, I know what else folks are going to love to see is you and all that you do and keeping up with your journey. So for those who need to do just that, what's the best way for folks to do so, Alicia?
We've got two websites, angelinarlington.com. And that'll take you to my Instagram, all the socials. That's also where you can get a free copy of my book. You can also go to unlikelycourage.com. It's impressive, but it's little, so it's growing. So angelinarlington.com or unlikelycourage.com. Unlikelycourage.com will take you to angelinarlington.com. So either of those. I'm on Instagram primarily. And also, I do have a YouTube channel. It's Unlikely Courage. Don't be surprised to see that my newest video is not new. So there's that.
Oh, don't worry about that.
Not worried. I still like those videos, actually. It makes me laugh looking back on them. So there will be more. There's more coming up. I just, responsible married lady here who's now getting more serious about her job. So.
Well, there you go. We're talking about indeed. We heard that right, folks. And a link to all of Alicia's goodies in the show notes. That way you can keep up with her and her journey and all that she's doing, especially when the book officially launches. Because it's going to launch one of these days, dang gummit. Mm-hmm. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. We'll have to go the David Goggins route. Print it yourself. Sell so many copies. Keep a bunch in the trunk. Stop by a bunch of bookstores indeed and call ahead and be like, you got that Alicia Johnson book? No. Call it like 5 more times out of nowhere. And then show up out of nowhere like James Redfield, Celestine Prophecy, and be like, hey, I got these books in trouble. Wait, we've had people calling about your book all freaking day. You came at the right time. We have to wait for the day shipping. All right. That's right indeed. So be on the lookout, folks. It's coming. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. It's going to be good stuff. It'll be a good read. That's right indeed. It'll be so great. Good much for good read. You have to put on a wonderful website known as Goodreads. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Well, before another rabbit hole opens up and a penguin pops out of it, any parting words before we close up shop?
Well, as I say with my little YouTube videos, let your fears inspire to be brave and live, and it only gets better from here. Thanks so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I really appreciate the laugh on my daddy's birthday. So it's a peaceful day. It's not been a sad day. It's been a great day. So thank you for having me.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for 3. And be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.